If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 235 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
I'm pretty good. How are you? You've been traveling the last week, so I've been not doing much of anything, but hanging out. It was a weird week with no ball games in town, so I've been around the house and just watching games. But how was your trip to Virginia?
Oh, it was great. Definitely a much-needed little mental reset. Saw a lot of family, aunt and uncle down there. I have four cousins, technically, but two of which are out of the state, so did see two of my cousins and their families. Stayed with one of my cousins, my oldest cousin, and his family, and yeah, it was fun. We didn't really do like a whole lot. Like, we were going to go to Six Flags. We didn't end up doing that, but just kind of hung out. Did a lot of like little things around the area. Probably do more stuff next time we go down there. Going to DC. Is there right in the obviously top of Virginia near DC? So probably hit up a lot of the DC stuff and amusement parks and all that fun stuff next time. But it was fun just to relax and, you know, little end of summer vacation. Kids went back to school today, Monday. So that was fun. But back in the grind, though, and I got should have a triple header of live looks this week. That'll be fun. I got Chase Hampton, Drew Thorpe, and Richard Fitz, I think, going I forget what order, but I think it lines up for Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, though nothing's been announced.
Yeah, obviously, they never announced it.
Yeah, especially double A for some reason, especially the Sea Dogs. Sea Dogs are terrible. I mean,
it's usually, the Red Sox in general. Yeah, the Drive don't either, ever.
Right. Usually you can figure it out, obviously, with how things line up. But you know, I think it should be Wednesday. I think who's the one that just went? I think Thorpe goes Thursday. I think Fitz Wednesday, and then Hampton Saturday, I want to say. But yeah. Hopefully it lines up that way. So I was hoping one of them would go Tuesday so I can get two looks at one of them, but obviously not. But still should be fun. And who just got promoted to Spencer Jones? Just got promoted to double A as well. So that'd be get some nice live looks at him as well. So that'll be fun. Nice little series here upcoming. But we got a pretty fun episode today. Chris is taking part in a midseason, two-thirds, three-quarters season Dynasty Mock Draft hosted by Nathan, you know, Dynasty One Stop. It's got a, you know, commissions 7,000 Dynasty Leagues. That's probably even low, but they are at pick, 320-ish so far. 15 teams that are in the middle of the 21st round. So I figured we could, you know, break it all down. I'm not in this mock draft, but a lot of fun picks. I already kind of glazed over the draft board a bit here. So what a fun picks that we'll dive into today. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. Though I should stop saying on Twitter because it's not technically called Twitter anymore, but I refuse to call it X. It's just weird.
Twitter forever.
And am I the only one that has a hard time finding the new X logo, like as the app on your phone? As I'm still looking for like the blue, and it's like I have so many black and white icons already on my phone. It's like hard to find. So this I have, let's see, like the Threads, Bleacher Report, Patreon. It's like I have a lot of black and white icons. It's hard to find the X
now. The only reason I can find it is because it's like when you on the iPhones when you swipe down, it says Siri suggestions. It's always my first one. So I'm on it too much. So it's just the first one I can just swipe down and click on real quick. It makes it easy.
Right. I mean, I do have it like on like my main screen, so it's not, I guess it's not too hard, but it's even like on my computer, like when you have like the tabs up top, I'm like, where's Twitter at? But so I guess you can follow us on Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review and make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings. All right. So this was 15 teams. Was it just standard like 5x5, Chris? It was OBP or average?
OBP and then saves and holds. So
okay,
you're not going to see as many relievers go as high. But yeah, I think it's the quality appearance, which is becoming more common, which I like to use in a lot. I think, let me pull up the exact scoring. But the quality appearance is, it's QH7, which is like basically you can go five innings. And if you still have like a, I think it's five innings of two earned runs or less, six innings, three earned runs less. So it's pretty similar. It's like a modified quality start, saves and holds combined, and then OBP. Everything else is pretty generic.
Yeah, that definitely like the five and two better because, you know, quality start, if you go 6-3, that's a 4.5 ERA. Like, how many of us would actually say like a 4.5 ERA is quality? It's not bad, but
yeah,
5.5 and 2, that's a 3.6 ERA. That's a lot better, especially in today's day and age. So, and plus, more guys are going 5 and 6 these days with the new, you know, going to the bullpen earlier, obviously. So, yeah, definitely like that is a lot.
Yeah.
So, let's dive right into it here. The first round went Shohei Ohtani 1, Ronald Acuna Jr. 2. Chris had the 3 pick. He went Corbin Carroll. Then J-Rod and Tatis rounded out the top 5. 6-10 went Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker, Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Yordan Alvarez, 11-15, Bo Bichette, Mookie Betts, Luis Robert, Aaron Judge, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Any surprises in that first round for you, Chris? Any or just your general thoughts on it?
Well, obviously the draft started before the Shohei injury, so kind of a caveat of him going 1-1, and now that's kind of what I've wrestled with. It's like, where do you put Ohtani? So at the time, I think that was certainly a fair pick. Acuna is my number one, but yeah, there's a big tier at the top. And so it was kind of chalky, in my opinion, like to start the draft. And you've seen guys like Bobby Witt move up a lot. He's been incredibly hot. and he kind of moved up a ton in the OBP format. I'm not sure I'd go 8 on Bobby Witt, but I do think he's borderline top 10. Ellie surprised me at 9, but again, with the upside, you know, I can see doing it. And then you look kind of just down the board, and these are just all the big names. So you're not too many surprises. You just wonder, like, I'd love to know where Ohtani goes if we start the first round today, knowing what we know, knowing that he has a torn UCL, knowing that he's still going to hit, but the questions of, does he get the surgery in the offseason? Does he try to hit, play through it and suffer because of that? Like, we know he's not going to pitch at least like next year. So I don't know. I'd just be curious to figure out like where in the world Ohtani lands now. But yeah, otherwise, like you said, it's at the time, everything was kind of went how I expected. And the people in the first round are certainly people that I value in that range too.
Yeah, with Ohtani, I feel like for me, I think I still have him top 10 just because if he gets it right after the regular season ends, because obviously the Angels aren't going to the postseason. So let's say he gets it like early to mid-October. You know, maybe he can be back in time for next season or at least not miss too much of it. And now he's still like with the bat alone. I mean, obviously, like 44 home runs and like 18 steals or something like that. Like, he's still like a first round top 15 guy with just the bat. So
right.
I think he's still top 10. Then you miss the pitcher side of things for a year. But hey, the downside is you still get like a top 15. Even let's say, you know, it limits him a little bit, missed a little bit of time. So still like a top 25 bat next year. So I think that still puts him top, you know, 10 overall for me. And he'll still be, let's see, he's 29 now. Birthday is mid-July, so it'll be time he gets back pitching again. He'll be 30. I think that's still top 10 worthy. So, yeah, I would love to see, though, if this was restarted now, where he would go. Probably a 6-7 range if I had to venture a guess. But
yeah.
I think that's pretty solid. But, yeah, like, looking at this first round, I wasn't really overly surprised. I was wanting to see where Vladdy went because, obviously, you know, Vladdy's a weird one. And, like, obviously, I went from being – you know, I never said he was overrated, but I was like kind of like, you know, when there was like that Yordan versus Vlad debate, I was definitely team Yordan and saying that Vladdy shouldn't be like a top 5 guy. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like I'm becoming a little bit of a Vlad defender because I still have him. I forget where off the top of my head. I think like top 20, 21, 22, somewhere in that in my rankings. And I was kind of called out for being too high on Vladdy now. So it's kind of weird how like the tables have turned a little bit, but it's just been a weird season for Vlad. You look at a lot of the metrics are still like pretty much in line with last year. Still very good. You know, quality of contact is still elite. Hard hit rate, nearly 53%. Barrel rate, 11.5%. EV, 91 miles an hour. You know, a lot of red on that Savant page. But the overall surface stats are just kind of like decent, but not great. 20 home runs and 556 plate appearances. 269, 344, 443 slash line. He's even trimmed the ground ball rate about 6.5%. Launch angle went from 4.3 degrees, 10.2 degrees. So it's kind of weird for Vladdy to, you look at these, you know, under the hood metrics and the surface stats, they don't kind of line up. But where are you at right now on Vladdy? Is that still an appropriate range for him, do you think?
So I still have him ranked 14th. So yeah, I think that's a fair spot for him. And you're right. Like, you look at the underlying metrics and everything kind of backs up and supports it. Like, his hard hit rate is 52.7%, one of the best in baseball. His average exit velocity of 93 miles an hour, also one of the best in baseball. Kind of across the board, just been really, really good. Yeah, I don't like to use the expected stats very much, like XBA and all those things. But it is worth noting that his XBA is 304 compared to a 268 batting average, showing a little bit of unluckiness there. I think people want to point fingers and just say, okay, like his career season was like in a year where, you know, they were playing in a variety of places, right? And so I don't know, like, what's the right answer here? I still like Vlad, but I'm not like, I don't think Vlad's like elite, but I do think he's still first round caliber.
Now, is he still the top first baseman for you? Because I think that's become a pretty massive glob. And obviously, Matt Olson's going bonkers this year. You know, could, you know, hit 60 home runs. Imagine having back-to-back years with 60 home run seasons. We haven't seen that since the steroid era. But, you know, obviously, you know, Pete Alonso's up there. So, You know, Goldschmidt, obviously, I don't think is, I think he's fourth out of this, but is Vlad still number one, or would you take Olsen over him at this point, or even Pete?
I still have Vlad number one, but it's pretty close. Like, so I have Vlad 14th, I have Freddie 16th, I've got Matt Olsen 20th, and Pete Alonso 22nd. And if you want to include Bryce Harper, he's 19th. So it's a pretty big glob at the top, but and they're all in the same tier technically in my rankings. So I couldn't fault anybody for going either way on that. But at the end of the day, like, I still like and believe in Vlad, but it's becoming kind of interesting.
Yeah, it feels weird to be a defender of Vlad now after being on the other side. Again, I never thought he was overrated or didn't like him or anything like that, but it feels weird to be on this side of it now. But yeah, I forgot to even mention Freddie Freeman, who might have 20 steals this year, which is just so weird. Yeah. Like, something that else to add to his all-around great production year in, year out. But yeah, it's Vlad going 15, not really overly shocking, but second round here, a couple pitchers went in the second round, a little bit of a pitcher run. End of the second round here, starting with, what's that pick, 26, Spencer Strider, and then the last three picks of the round, Corbin Burns went to Chris, Yuri Perez, Garrett Cole. So with Strider off the board there, first off, how badly were you hoping Strider would fall to you with that pick? And after he didn't, how hard of that was a pick between Burns and Yuri there for that second pitcher spot? Did you consider Yuri there, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was tough not getting Strider. Like, I think he's the clear top guy for Dynasty at this point, especially with Shane going down with Tommy John. So that was tough, obviously. And picking at the back of the second round at pick 28, a lot of the bats that I really liked were off the board at that point. So I figured just grab an ace, and Corbin Burns has looked like an ace again the last couple months, looking like himself and looking like a really good bet. But yeah, you have to consider Yuri, who I have in the same tier. Like, I literally have Strider up there by himself, and then you have these guys, this next glob of guys in a tier. And I mean, there's a real case that Yuri could be the Dynasty SP1 in the next year or two, which is crazy, but it's the kind of upside we're looking at. I know Strider's young, so like, either Yuri's going to have to be really good or Strider's going to have to fall off some. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can go wrong with Burns as like an anchor of a staff. But yeah, it was certainly a consideration, especially after all the bats went off the board, how they did. It was just a little bit disappointing. I don't normally like taking pitchers this high in a dynasty league, but it's a mock draft, so you can play around and experiment a little more, which is kind of why I went with Corbin Burns there, just to kind of fill out and see the build. And he might be one of the oldest players on my team, minus auto draft. We may get to it a little later. But yeah, I mean, if Burns is like the oldest on my team, then I feel pretty good.
Yeah, it looks like he, yeah, outside of the auto draft, let's see here. I think he, well, your round 14 pick, I think they're close in age.
Let's see.
No, yeah. we can say Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
He's, they're pretty close, but yeah, so the second round was pretty interesting. You got first prospect off the board. Jackson Holliday went basically smack dab in the middle of the round. So that team started with Tucker and then Jackson Holliday, which is pretty awesome build there. And to go back to the first baseman real quick, yeah, so Vlad went off the board at 15. And then three picks later, you had Matt Olson. Three picks after that, back-to-back, Pete and Freddie Freeman. So, and a lot of corner infielders in that second round, too. You got Austin Riley going off the board in the middle of all those first basemen. You got Devers right after it. You got Gunner over there as well. Ozzy still in second round too. So a lot of nice bats in that second round. And then back in the third round, Chris went Michael Harris with that third pick. Mike Trout still went third round. But the one I was kind of like really stood out to me, because I was going to put out a tweet to see like what people's thoughts were on this guy. You know, super highly ranked prospect coming into the year. Went bonkers in spring training, then hasn't been bad this season, but I think underwhelming is a fair term to use with him. And that's Jordan Walker with the St. Louis Cardinals. And obviously came out of the year pretty hot, then cooled off a little bit, got demoted down to AAA for a bit, then came back up. Again, was, you know, had a little hot stretch there to start off his second tenure, but Overall, you're looking at a 253, 324, 409 slash line in 340 plate appearances, 11 home runs, and 6 steals. You know, quality contact's pretty good, 46% hard hit rates, but overall, it's been a, you know, again, underwhelming rookie year for Jordan Walker. Still only 21, obviously, so has all the upside in the world. Have your, like, long-term projections for Walker changed? Like, are you thinking he's a buy low? Or are you altering your, you know, long-term thoughts on him? Where are you at on Walker these days?
I mean, if I can buy low on him, then, like, yeah, I'd absolutely love to. He's, I think he's been fine, but he hasn't been good enough to, like, just wow everybody. Yeah. And so ultimately, that's going to kind of make his perceived value seem lower than it is. And so I do think that he's absolutely a great buy. I think that you're still looking at a big-time power bat. You're looking at someone that can ultimately provide you with power and a little bit of speed and even a bit of average too. So I don't know. Like, I'm definitely in on Jordan Walker. I have him top 50. You know, 37 is higher than I have him, but also at the same time, like, if you want to get your guy, you have to get him because he's going to go. So ultimately, like, I'm fine with the spot. And I think that Walker is a pretty good buy. It just doesn't get the recognition or the deserve that he does. He's 20. He just turned 21 years old. He's been playing the majors all season and he's been holding his own. So ultimately, I think he's going to be fine. And I would buy him all day long.
Yep, as would I. I still have him. Let's see, where do I have Jordan Walker in Dynasty rankings right now? Yeah, I still have him 34 right now. So that's still ahead of where he got taken in this draft by, you know, a few picks or so. Yeah, I'm absolutely, my opinion on Jordan Walker hasn't changed. I think he's in line for a really big year next year. Obviously, like, the raw power is huge. You know, sneaky speed as well. I think he, you know, could be definitely be like a 10-15 steal guy. Could hit for at least a decent average as to go along with that. So I think the next year, second year for him is going to be a nice step forward. So absolutely, if I can buy low this offseason, I absolutely would. All right, going back over to the pitching side here. So the first, let's see, the first 10 pitchers off the board were Strider, Burns, Yuri Perez, Gerrit Cole, Zach Gallen, Luis Castillo, Sandy Alcantara, George Kirby. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8. And then Framber Valdez and Kevin Gausman were 9-10. Then they finished that same round. Woodruff, Webb, Nola were top 13. And then you went with the 15th pitcher off the board, Julio Urias, one pick behind Dylan Cease. And then we had a pretty big pitcher run after that. We'll get into that in a little bit. But Urias, obviously, another guy that hasn't been bad by any means, but, you know, given what he's done in the past and what the expectations were this year, given where he was, you know, drafted in redrafts or ranked in Dynasty, it's been a kind of a slight down year for Urias, but I'm assuming that you're not overly worried about the down year.
Well, not in particular, but if I could have done the pick over, I probably wouldn't have gone with him there. I was running low on the clock and got tagged, and I realized I was up, and I just kind of panic picked because I wasn't prepared at all. And so that's kind of why I landed with him. But looking at the board, it's like, okay, looking at some of the arms after him, would I rather have Freddy Peralta at this point? Yeah, probably. Hunter Green, that's pretty close. Tyler Glasnow, yeah, definitely. Grayson Rodriguez was another one that went after him. You know, that's probably in the same range. Logan Gilbert. There's a lot of names. Like you mentioned, there's a pretty big run here after the fact. And it's like, man, I wish that, you know, I had taken somebody else. But ultimately, it is what it is. And, you know, I do believe, like, I think that he's going to be fine, but he's never been, like, an elite arm. Like, Julio Urias has never been an ace, and you've never really drafted him to be such. He's put up good ratios, but doesn't strike out a ton of batters. But ultimately, like, you look at the profile this year, and a lot looks pretty similar. It's just without the results. So, you know, his strand rate's a little lower than it has been in the past, and his BABIP's a little higher than it's been in the past. But he's only walking 4.8% of batters, which is pretty elite. 24.7% strikeout rate, so nearly a 20% K minus BB. And ultimately, he's just allowing more contact, which is interesting, and it just has hurt him a bit. At the end of the day, like, I still think he'll be fine. He's running one of the highest CSWs of his career, which is encouraging to see. And so you look at the RA, I mean, the Sierra's still 3.84, which isn't even great compared to what he's done in the past. But I do think that Urias will be fine, but it's just the expectations. Like, he's not an ace, but I think he's can still be a decent SP2.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I think SP2 is a good range for him. And I'm even encouraged by the cutter he added this year, which has been a pretty good pitch for him as well. 164 batting average against, 291 slug allowed on that. Throws it about 9% of the time. And yeah, the three offerings, four seam, slurve, and change all kind of went down a few percentage points from the previous year. But yeah, I think there's not that have been like super high on Julio Urias, but I think, yeah, SP2 is very solid. Like you start that's your SP2 for this as well. So I think, and just especially in a win now team, I think that's a pretty solid pick there for sure. And then obviously, except there's a big pitching run after that. Hunter Brown, Freddy Peralta, Hunter Green, G-Rod, Glasnow, Gilbert, Wheeler, Javier, Freed, Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Jesus Luzardo, Nick Lodolo, who you took the next round, and Gavin Williams. Well, I'm actually a little bit shocked that Gavin Williams didn't go a little bit higher.
Yeah.
In this, as he's been an absolute stud. Like, he has the makings of, you know, a future fantasy ace. I have him as my, let's see, for pitchers. I think he's like my SP12. Let me do a quick filter there. Yes, he's my SP12 right behind G-Rod and George Kirby. So like, I have him ahead of guys like Gausman, Javier, Freed, Wheeler, Gilbert, all of those. Big cluster in my rankings as well. But yeah, I am just, you know, absolutely. And I've always been a huge Gavin Williams guy. I always loved the stuff. You know, two great breakers, which is kind of like, you look at the Cleveland way, it's like it's kind of like Tristan McKenzie, like, you know, fastball, two pretty good breakers that he can miss bats with. Like, he's got the really sturdy frame. I'm, as long as he can stay healthy, which he hasn't really had a lot of issues lately with that. Like, I'm all in. Like, I already have him as a dynasty ace. If I was looking more like, you know, like winning in year two or three of an initial startup draft, I wouldn't be opposed to taking him in like round six, seven, whatever it may be, and having him be the anchor of my staff. I think he's that good of a pitcher. So, yeah, I think who got that? Let's see. That was – who was that? Bill DeBeer. I'm not fully sure who Bill DeBeer is, but congrats to you, sir. That's a great pick there. I like Evan Williams there a lot.
Yeah, it was another one of those because I'm dumb and wasn't prepared for a mock that I hadn't uploaded my rankings. Like, you know, you can upload your rankings on Fantrax, and, you know, it's an easy, easy pick there. Like, I can't believe I saw him go the next pick, and I was just baffled that I didn't see him at all, because looking at my rankings, I have Gavin Williams. Oh, maybe. Where's he at? Somewhere on my list. He's just wanting to, the sheets wanting to be dumb. I have him 64th overall, which, looking at SP, like, he's in like the third big tier of starting pitcher. And yeah, I think that's a really good spot for him. And I think you could take him as SP2 and be thrilled.
Yeah.
I think you can take him top 10 in dynasty and be thrilled. So you have him where particularly 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, SP14. So, yeah, I mean, he's a stud in my opinion.
Yeah, so I have him SP12, 55th overall, like right in a huge cluster. So, yeah, I think that was good value there on Gavin Williams. I think he's only going to go up from here. But the last pitcher kind of like in this cluster that went the round after all those guys I just mentioned, Shane McClanahan, obviously would have been taken in round two. before the injury, but unfortunately we won't see him again until 2025. Do you think that was good value on McClanahan? Like, I still have him as a top 10 dynasty arm. Like, obviously what he's shown, like, it was him and Strider kind of duking it out this year. You know, Burns kind of in that discussion as well. And he'll still be, you see, when he comes back, he'll be, I think, close to 28. So still not too old. Top five talent for just for starting pitchers. So I still have him as a top 10 arm. Maybe that's a bit too high, but he went as, I don't even know what SP he went in here. It looks like, I'm like, just ballpark it, then SP25-ish, something like that, in the middle of the seventh round. So we're talking, see, that's pick 93, 6, 97. I think that was also a great value there. Where do you have McClanahan now? Like, if you were, you know, in a dynasty startup and kind of a win now, would you consider him, or would you only be looking at him if you were more like, you know, win later or rebuild scenario?
I mean, if you take him win now, you're just throwing away a roster spot for at least a year. And that's the tough balance of it. Like, I've got him ranked 94th. So if you're confident enough that you can win with just going out and, you know, just getting the guys later and see on McClanahan, then you can have an absolute, you know, beast of a team down the stretch. But it takes a lot of confidence to say, like, I will win this year and draft Shane McClanahan. Because ultimately, he's going to give you a zero next year. And what does he look like coming back? Like, we obviously hope he comes back and looks like an ace. But there's zero guarantee. And I think that's the risk you run. We know the talent. We know the upside. But you have to be, I would say it's a tough spot to take him if you're trying to win in year one in a startup.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. But if I was there in round seven, that's very tempting. So I still have him a good amount ahead of that. Like, I'd still take him over guys, you know, like guys in that last round, Joe Ryan, Pablo Lopez, Max Fried. And obviously, it's hard to do if you're in a win now. Like, if that's your goal, is like win right off the bat and have the greatest team possible in year one, that is pretty hard. But I think he's a good buy right now. I think the value on him has dropped a little bit farther than it probably should. So I would definitely go out and look to, like, if you're in a team that's got like middle of the pack and you can trade off some pieces to get a guy like him, or even like Walker Buehler, who went next round. That was kind of interesting that McClanahan and Buehler went that close together now. But go out and get like a Walker Buehler type. That's kind of like the team, those guys that can help you. Like, if you know you're not contending next year, but your window is like 2-3 years out, those are guys that you can get now for cheap, or cheaper, I should say. That can definitely be, you know, core members for you when your contention window comes up. So definitely two great targets there. Hopping over to the prospect side of things here for a little bit. Obviously, as I mentioned, Jackson Holliday was the first prospect off the board, middle of round two. Then there was a little bit of a gap here to the next prospect, which I think actually was you, Chris. On up, Junior Caminero was taken kind of in the middle of round four. Then you had Churio going to Chris in round four near the end of it. Dylan Cruz at right after Jackson Churio. And then the fifth prospect here, as I'm trying to find him, Wyatt Langford went kind of near the end of round five. See the next five prospects here to round out the top 10 taken. Got a little bit of a gap here after that. And we got James Wood, who went also to Chris early in round seven. He's the sixth prospect off the board here. You know, see, Royce is no longer a prospect. Keep scrolling. Tiedemann is actually the seventh prospect off the board in early part of round eight. Then you got, let's see here, Jordan Lawler, again to Chris, early part of round nine, is the eighth prospect off the board. Let's see, last two prospects. Is Encarnacion Strand still eligible as a prospect? No, right? He just graduated, I'm pretty sure. But then you got Colton Cowser and Pete Kerr Armstrong, and then Paul Skeen's kind of rounding it out. So you went Churio, end of four, Woods, end of, or James Wood, end of seven, and Jordan Lawler, end of nine. Like, how happy were you to get those, like, three top 10 prospects where you got them?
Yeah, prospects fell. And so I just kind of exploited the value. And that's kind of when I started going prospect heavy. And this is generally not the strategy I go with at all when it comes to dynasty. But I think this year has changed the outlook a lot, because we've seen teams be more aggressive. We've seen younger guys pushed quicker than ever. And that ultimately allows you to draft prospects with more confidence, knowing that you're going to get a big leaguer sooner than later. Like taking Jackson Churio in the fourth round at 58 overall, like I think Churio is going to be a big leaguer next May. It's not to sit on him long at all. Same can be said for James Wood. Jordan Lawler might be up this year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. Like all three of those guys are probably up for you by, you know, probably the All-Star break. I think probably James Wood is the last one in ETA there. But yeah, like, it's not like you're waiting on them for 2-3 years.
No, exactly. So that's the nice thing is we don't have to wait as long, guys. And you look at the international guys, and that brings up a different point. But like, I just took Matt Shaw in the 21st round, and Matt Shaw's going to be a big leaguer mid-year next year. He's got sent to Double A, and he was drafted this year. So like, we're seeing teams say, screw it, we're going in. We're not going to waste these players' time in the minor leagues, and we're going to see what they got. I mean, Ronnie Mauricio went 20th round. Like, I know Mauricio's kind of split on opinions, but Mauricio still has incredible power and speed, and he's shown a really good feel for contact this year. So my dynasty strategy is actually evolving to play with this idea that there, when there's values on the board to be exploited with prospects, you do it all day long, because Jordan Lawler might be considered a fourth rounder next year. Or, I mean, there's people that value him over Jackson Churio. I mean, he could be, let's say he comes up at the end of this year and just dominates for 3 weeks. Like, where are people going to draft him? They're going to draft him top 50 pretty easily. Not to say that he's going to return that, but then you look at, like, I got Colt Keith at 153. Like, Keith's another one right on the cusp of debuting. He could be up any day now. James Wood, I mean, you know, Wood's someone that I'm still kind of split on how I feel about, but the upside's tremendous here. And you know, if you whiff on a couple, then whatever. But you know, you can whiff on major leaguers too, and that's the thing. I think people are so scared to whiff on prospects, but the fact that you don't have to sit on them as long now is changing the game completely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's more incentive to get these guys up sooner, and we're seeing that a lot this year, which is very exciting to see. And like I said, like you're gonna have Churio probably, if I had to guess, we'll say like May, June next year. James Wood maybe slightly after that, and then Lawler maybe even this year. If not, you know, he's probably up the first out of these three. So and then you got, you know, Colt Keith in the 11th, like you mentioned, he's could be say, kind of similar timeline to Lawler, could be this year or early next year. Then he went Walker Jenkins, who's obviously got to wait a couple years on, but at that point, you know, that's fine to go, you know, get some of those lower level guys, because that's really your only, you know, 21 rounds in. I'd say your only two guys that are over, you know, a year away are Walker Jenkins and probably like a Jackson Jobe. And you even got Matt Shaw with your last pick there in the 21st. And he's already at the Double A. Maybe he's up, you know, end of next year, second half of next year. Mauricio obviously could be up any day now. Still waiting on that. So, yeah, I like your build a lot so far. And then you even got Vinny Pasquantino near the end of the 8th there. Now, kind of a lot of first basemen in this range as well. We even got asked a question on Twitter that we were both tagged in earlier today, kind of asking us to rank like 5 first basemen. It was like Cassis, Lowe, Torque, Christian Walker, and I forget the 5th, maybe like Josh Naylor or something like that. But a lot of first basemen went off the board in like round 6, 7, 8, 9, a good, God, probably 10 of them or so, including 4 in a row in the 9th. But Torque went right after you, oh no, right before you, excuse me, in the early part of round 7. So that's pick 92. Obviously, Torque, up until recently, has been, I think it's fair to say, a bit of a disappointment. You know, the surface stats, especially the underlying metrics, are always pretty solid, but he's really shot up rankings a lot over the last month or two, because he's been, you know, on fire since, you know, really July. July, he only hit .237. This thing, he's still not hitting for a ton of average. You know, his best average month so far, .267 back in May, then .196 in June, .237 in July, .247 in August. But the power has really ticked up. He has 19 home runs over the last 3 months or so. But so overall, he's still only hitting .229 though, Chris. You know, I feel like the Torque hype is getting a bit out of control. I still like Torque. He's a solid player long term, but I still don't have him even close to my top 100. I think he's closer to 200 than 100 for me, but where are you at on him now with given what you've seen recently?
He has moved up and he's closer to top 100. He's a really tough eval right now because the underlying stuff looks better than the performance has been. And even with like the step up in performance recently, he still hasn't been like all that great. Like if we look at like since July, he's still just hitting 242 with a 332 OBP. Now, granted, he has 12 home runs and 208 plate appearances over that time. But like we're not seeing like the production on the slash line. And the contact skills are, they've improved, but it's not to the level that you want them to be. So ultimately, like, I think Torque is a tough one. Like, who is Spencer Torkelson? And I think that's what we all want to know right now. I do think he's improving. I do think he's settling into his own. But at the end of the day, like, I'd like to see a little bit more out of him before I'm willing to kind of go all in. And I will say, like, it's encouraging. I'm looking at the month-to-month splits, and the contact is trending upward. The walk rate's trending upward, and the average and OBP are also trending upward. And you're getting the power too, which is good. But ultimately, gosh, I don't know. Like, he's in kind of a glob there, first baseman. It's like you can go a lot of different directions with him. I think people want to bank on that upside. I would agree. I think he's breaking out, but I'm not sure like to what level he gets to. Like,
right,
where does he settle in? I think is what we have to figure out. Like, is he a consistent top 100 player? Like, okay, I can see that, but I'm not sure we see him get to like top 50 status. And I think that's what people are kind of hoping for.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, to get the top 50 status, being a guy that provides very little on the base paths, like you got to be a guy that's hitting, you know, 270 plus or like 30 plus home runs. And yeah, the power can get there. You know, he's hit 23 home runs this year overall. I think he's on pace for like, you know, 27, 28, even in a poor hitter's park. So, and then, you know, quality contact's been very good, 51% hard hit rate. You know, you have 15% barrel rate, 92.3 average exit velo. You know, all of those are in the top 10% of hitters this year. So even in that park, he's still going to be a 30 home run guy. But I don't think he's ever going to sniff 270, 280. Is he better than 229? Yes. But what, 240, 250? I really don't see. Like, I'd cap him at 260. I really don't see him hitting above 260. So maybe if he's 260 and 30, okay, that could be top 100. But I think that's kind of where he caps out. So it's like one of those draft picks that I don't really see a, you know, high likelihood of a positive ROI there. And I'd much rather have, you know, just looking at all the first basemen in this glob. And nothing against Torkelson again, but see, I'd rather have Christian Walker right now. I would rather have Vinny Bascontino, who you took almost a full round later, almost two rounds later, actually. And then that glob, Josh Naylor. You know, I think he's actually closer to that glob, like Naylor, Spencer Steer. Andrew Vaughn's in that glob, too. Is Andrew Vaughn like the most boring hitter in baseball now? He's in like the Alex Verdugo, just like boring, not bad, just boring. I mean, look at everything about Vaughn is just middle of the road. Like, look at the Savant page. It's like a lot of just like okay, not bad, not good metrics. So I've kind of given up on him being like a top 100 guy. He's just like a top 200 ish guy for me right now. But yeah, I think Torque's a sell higher. And now obviously most trade deadlines have passed, you know, so you might have to wait till the offseason. But assuming he doesn't go into like a massive funk over the last, you know, 5 weeks or so, when you have him, I might look to sell high in the offseason. I think you can get a pretty penny for him right now. And I think the perceived value, again, is much higher than the actual value for sure. Kind of moving on here, next couple of rounds here. See a lot of relievers start to go into here. You know, when, you know, you didn't take a reliever at all yet, but, you know, this being a saves hold league, Chris, like, what is your approach in the saves hold league when it comes to drafting these relievers? I mean, obviously, again, you haven't taken one yet, so I'm not sure if that's by design or not, but kind of, if you're obviously looking to win now, are you looking to at least draft a few, or are you more so just given that there's a wider kind of array of quality arms that can provide value for you in this format? Is that a position you're looking to kind of wait on a little bit and maybe even kind of look to, you know, capitalize off the waiver wire early in the season?
Well, in a saves holds format, I don't touch RP basically until the very end. And then you just throw upside darts pretty much. And you can ultimately do well by doing this because everybody wants the high-end closers, but we forget that there's plenty of high upside arms that also get plenty of holds. And you can exploit that and get those guys dirt cheap. And then if they don't pan out, you play the wire, basically. But you think about guys like a Brian Abreu or a Eric Swanson. Like, those are the type of guys that aren't sexy at all, but ultimately give you the same value as getting a high-end closer. And in that instance, like, why would I pay, like, these closers are going near top 100. Why would I pay that when I can, when I feel like I can get the same value at the very end of a draft and pay nothing for them, when I can build my lineup and get some, a ton of bats? And like you say, if they falter, they falter. Who cares? There's so many good relievers that get holds consistently that you can just wait and punt. So that's why I think there's a decent balance. And I kind of like going towards like saves plus holds divided by two. So like the holds is worth like half of what a save is. It kind of balances out a little bit. Or even save plus hold divided by three. So like a third of a point for a hold. That way you still are giving value to the closers, because I can just, like you said, I can sit around and just grab whatever reliever I think is, like, there's plenty of good, talented relievers that are just not going to get drafted, and I'll take them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's definitely a way to go. And especially when you see so much turnover at this position year to year, like, you know, go back, I don't know how far we have to go back, 2 or 3 years, like, Felix Bautista is not as highly thought of as he is now, even given the unfortunate injury, but he's a guy you could have picked up or traded for super cheap. Like, these guys pop up all the time. Just looking at some of the relievers that are taken in this kind of rounds, like 10 to 15 range, Albert Alzolay, another guy's kind of popped up this year, kind of getting into that higher leverage role now that he's healthy with the Chicago Cubs. And obviously we've had guys like Andrés Muñoz over the last couple of years, Joan Duran, you know, guys like that, that have kind of stepped into prominent roles and really fear. And even now, Yennier Cano with Baltimore, is he the next one that, and he went in the beginning of the 17th round here. So right in front of Jacob Mizierowski and AJ Smishover, who you took there. So yeah, I definitely think that it's a definite position in this format to wait on a bit. And you can still build like a really good bullpen by waiting and just kind of playing the waiver wire, going some upside picks for sure. But going back to the mound real quick, as you were talking, one name that I saw in the 13th round that really stood out to me, that's came on really hard lately, that's Cole Ragans from the Kansas City Royals. Came over from the Texas Rangers earlier in the year and has really just become a completely new pitcher. And to the point where, you know, is he like a top 100 guy in redraft leagues next year? I've seen people talk about that, and we'll see how he ends the season. But since he came over from Texas, numbers have been really, really good. Six starts, 2.08 ERA, 34 and two-thirds innings, 118 whip, 47 Ks to 10 walks. And this is a guy being taken. I see some similar arms in this range for him. I mean, it's the same round that you took Cade Horton earlier on in the round, obviously, and, you know, top five pitching prospect in baseball. But he's kind of going right behind the guys like Clayton Kershaw, Robbie Ray, Reed Detmers, right ahead of Justin Steele, Lucas Giolito, Jordan Montgomery, you know, Taj Bradley, Jose Barrios, guys like that. So obviously I have no idea where this is in the pitching landscape, but are you buying what Cole Ragans is doing? Is he a guy that you'd be confident taking around? I mean, this isn't too bad for, this is like, I don't know, pick 200 or so, give or take. Is that a good value for Cole Ragans? Are you believing in him right now?
Yeah, I mean, what if you get a SP2 at this value? It's awesome. And it's so wild to like look at this and just, the Royals made him better. What, like, what is this? It's just really strange to look at, but he's completely changed his arsenal and throwing the four seam a lot less. He's throwing the changeup more. He's throwing a slider, which has been awesome. And the velos have just taken a huge jump. And that's, you know, that's the interesting thing to look at. It's like, okay, like, man, he took a massive step forward. And now, like, with these new pitches, the cutter, like, the slider is just highly impressive. I don't know. Like, I really do believe in him, which I'm shocked I'm saying that I would take him this high, but I absolutely would. I think it's a good value to gamble at pick 190. And I'm sad that I didn't. I took Cade Horton early in the round, but that's a pretty good value on Cole Reagans.
Yeah, I think it's a good value on Cade Horton as well. Like, I think you said you have him as your SP2 in terms of pitching prospects, and I have him as my SP3. I have Tiedemann ahead, though. Tiedemann, I might be switching that soon. Tiedemann hasn't looked great. Maybe the injury is still lingering. Who knows? Obviously, I still love Tiedemann, but yeah, I think that's pretty solid range for Cade Horton. And another guy kind of fitting into what we were saying earlier about your build here, another prospect that, you know, is probably up, you know, by the All-Star break next year, maybe even sooner than that. I mean, he could probably pitch it out of the cup rotation right now. So yeah, definitely still like that pick a lot. But next thing I saw in terms of pitchers there, got right next few rounds after, you get a lot of the injured guys like Mason Miller coming back from injury, Tristan McKenzie, you know, who else was, Kyle Wright's down there as well. But Merrill Kelly, what does that guy have to do to get more respect? I mean, I get it, he's not like young, but how old's Merrill Kelly? Like 31, 32. But he went beginning of the 18th round. So quick math, that's like pick 260-ish, something like that. What does that guy have to do to get respect, Chris? Because all Merrill Kelly does is just pitch well year in, year out, and just doesn't get the respect ever.
Well, and that's why I think that, like, what's the generic strategy in Dynasty with pitcher? And it's to get an ace, get a solid SP2, and then pound the living tar out of these guys like Merrill Kelly that nobody wants, who consistently performs. I don't know why he doesn't get any love. He's boring. He's 34 years old. But we're looking at a sub-3 ERA right now, over 136 innings. He's striking out more than a batter per inning. That's a near 27% rate. And walking under 9% of batters he's faced. It's I don't get it. Like, it's just crazy to me, like, how much people ignore these kind of pitchers. Yeah, they're boring, but shoot, these are the guys that win you fantasy leagues, and yep. I would be all about that.
No, absolutely. And yeah, I guess a couple years older than I thought he was. So yeah, 34 obviously is really old in terms of dynasty years. This is for most of us at least. But yeah, I would take him definitely above. Let's looking at some names that he went behind. I'm taking him above, like, James Paxton went like two rounds earlier, who I think is like right around the same age, give or take. I would absolutely take Merrill Kelly over James Paxton. I would take him over Alek Manoah, probably over Yu Darvish at this point, who went like five rounds earlier, who's even older by a year or two, over Alek Manoah, over Lucas Giolito. Yeah, definitely. I think that was a phenomenal value on Merrill Kelly for sure. Any, just like, you know, we're kind of wrapping up the show here soon. Any surprise picks to you, whether it was too high, too low, where you saw the player taken and you're like, man, like, how was that guy still available here? Or, man, that's really early there. And any like surprises to you in this draft?
It's always interesting to see like how people are valuing players like at this point in the year. And it'll kind of pan off in the offseason as there'll be more consensus. But, you know, Tristan Casas is one who's been soaring up boards, and he went 56 to our friend Cubby Knoll. So that was a pretty high pick and high praise for Casas, but I think there's a fair argument for him there now.
Yeah.
And so that was when it's like, oh, wow. Like, you know, you never know where people are going to value these guys at this point. So he was kind of the first one on the board where I was like, okay, like, people are like all in on Tristan Casas at this point. I still think there's good values to be had on different pitchers. Like you said, like Gavin Williams at 89, like, you know, stupid me for not seeing that, but really, really good value there. I love Tanner Bibee too. Jesse Roach took him at 96, and, you know, Bibee's one that I've got like 73 in my rankings. He just keeps getting the job done over and over and over and over again. Walker Buehler was interesting at 111. You know, he's coming back from TJ. We don't know what he'll look like, but he's one that I've struggled where to rank based on, like, you know, who is he? What does he look? I didn't love him in general before, like his fastball had just gotten pretty bad. But ultimately, yeah, you know, I didn't know where to rank. I still don't know where to rank Walker Buehler. And so that was an interesting one. Relievers, like I said, went way higher than I would pay for him in saves holds leagues, but just a matter of strategy there. I'm trying to find one that's like, man, this guy, went really late, later than I thought. I will say, I think Shane Boz at 142 is a steal. Like,
yep, agreed.
He's going to come back, and I think he's got ace level stuff, which is exciting. I'm just scrolling through the board and just kind of rambling for a second.
Yeah, while you do, there's a couple that I saw I kind of thought, like, Kerry Carpenter went in the middle of the 17th. Like, this is a guy that, when I was looking at, like, last 30-day stats, like, he's, like, basically second, or maybe it's third now, because Ozuna's been crazy for you guys. Why do you guys need more offensive firepower? You already have, like, the most stacked lab, and then now you got Marcel Ozuna just going bonkers, but... Like, the last 30 days, like, looking like WOBA, WRC+, plus, Mookie Betts is first by an absolute freaking mile in both, and then it's Marcel Ozuna, and then it's Kerry Carpenter, who is just, like, quietly, it's been really good for Detroit. I don't think anybody notices, because it's Detroit, and his name's not Torque or Riley Green or Tariq Skubal, but he's been really good, and I like him more than Torkelson. Obviously, the name doesn't have Kerry the same weight, but I think Carpenter's a great target right now in Dynasty Leagues. And then there's, like, this little catcher run here where people are like, oh, I should take a catcher. Like, we had, let's see, round 18, Endy, Cal Raleigh, Wilson Contreras, Logan O'Hoppe, you got Kiber Ruiz. Next round, Shona Heim. And then the end of the 19th round, we had Yainer Diaz, who this is the same guy that took Merrill Kelly the round before that. I think that's pretty good value on Diaz. I like Diaz more than most of the guys that were taken in that round before him. Outside of probably Logan O'Hoppe, who's pretty close to me. But I think Diaz, like, yeah, he's still kind of not playing full time, but maybe, you know, I think, is Maldonado a free agent after this year? He should be.
I mean, he should probably retire. He's like 39.
I know, right? So hopefully more playing time for Yainer Diaz next year, because he's been really good, as I'm pulling up his stats here. And I don't think he gets really as much love as he should, even though he's on Houston. That's obviously kind of a bigger market team. But, yeah, he's hitting .283 this year, 19 home runs in his 314 plate appearances. You know, pretty good quality of contact. Doesn't walk much at all, but keeps the K rate in check. You know, again, you know, solid contact skills as well, 83% zone contact. Chase is super high, but, again, makes it work. Doesn't whiff too much. So I think he's a nice little top 10 catcher there. But, yeah, those two, Carpenter and Diaz, are kind of guys that stood out to me in the last couple of rounds so far.
Yeah, the catchers, it was some good values pretty late on them. And yeah, I really wanted Logan O'Hoppe. He was one that, you know, I wish I had gotten, but he went a pick before me. So I took Kiber Ruiz, who's having a really underrated year.
He is,
for people that haven't really followed him closely. I know the Nats have been kind of like, whatever, but Kiber Ruiz has been like a top five fantasy catcher this year. He's hit 15 home runs, hitting .262. Like, he's been really, really good. He makes elite contact. Like, he's 95% zone, 88% overall, which is just absurdly good. And he keeps getting better too. Like, you look down the stretch and he's just, the numbers keep improving. He's hitting, since July 1st, he's hitting .311 with a .364 OBP and near .500 slug. He's cut the K rate down to 12% over that span. So yeah, it's really fun. Kiber Ruiz is somebody that's moving way up my dynasty rankings, because I was guilty of underrating him. And I didn't realize how good he had been, but I'll gladly take him in the 18th round as my catcher. Like, that's an awesome pick.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I like Diaz slightly more, but yeah, Kiber is absolutely just having a really underrated year. And I was guilty of it too, even in my last update. So I bumped him up since then. And yeah, he's, again, these are, like, there's a lot of value to be had on these, you know, the bad teams. Like, you look at these Kansas Cities, the Pittsburghs, the Washingtons, well, maybe not Oakland, but, you know, really, you know, even Oakland at times, you can just find these guys that kind of fly under the radar, because, you know, no one's really paying attention to the major league team, because they're, you know, 20 games under and out of the playoff picture. But yeah, Kiber Ruiz, I think, is still a pretty solid target. I think you can still get him for an affordable cost. Like, these are guys that went, like, MJ Melendez still went, like, higher than all of these guys by a few rounds. I'm not really sure on that one, but you're kind of a fun little catcher thing here near the end of this draft. Well, you guys still got like another 20 rounds, so we're not near the end of it, but so far for y'all. But last question I have for you, Chris, I have a random one I just saw. Your last pick was Matt Shaw. Obviously, very good prospect on the rise, you know, hitting very well since the draft. Right before that, your boy, Roman Anthony. How mad were you?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know where to take Roman Anthony. I'd started going prospects and, you know, Anthony was the next highest on my board. But then I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm taking Matt Shaw, who just got sent to – he was on my mind because he just got sent to double A.
Right.
He's been absolutely incredible. So I was like, you know what? Just take Matt Shaw. But, yeah, Anthony's tough. He's been so good this year. And you may get – I don't know if he'll get promoted double A to end the year. Probably not, considering Greenville is going to be in the playoffs or hosting the playoffs. But, yeah, he'll be your way pretty soon. He's very talented.
Yeah, I bet you he starts at double A next year.
So. Yeah, I think so.
That'd be pretty exciting. And I think Bonacy will still be here then. Yeah, I don't think they bump him to triple A that quickly. So, and hopefully we get some nice offensive firepower up here in Portland. But again, I got some pitching firepower coming into town with Somerset. You got Richard Fitz, you got Drew Thorpe, you got Chase Hampton, so all of which I'll see later on this week, and we'll probably talk about it at some point. But that will wrap up this episode here. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.